Good morning, Chairperson.
Hi, Estelle. 10 o'clock, shall we get going? Firstly, colleagues, can I... oh, dear, I don't know what I've done yet. Okay, here we are. Okay, so firstly, just to say that welcome, everybody. As you know, we're looking at the Auditing Professions Amendment Bill. And as suggested last week, unless there's anything new, there's only one policy issue outstanding, that's the mandatory rotation of auditors, right? Whether it should in fact be in the bill or not, it is a current policy of IRBA. So apart from that, we ask parties, if possible, to come with their party positions. And the ANC is meeting this week, the core of the study group, to decide on that. But in the meanwhile, I think we should get greater clarity on what the issues are. And if it's okay with the meeting, perhaps we could start with that policy issue. And if there are any other policy issues, we can look at those, and then we can go through the bill clause by clause. You will recall that I said I would read, which I've done. And in fact, I exchanged with Frank and Esther yesterday, and they've done it too. And Frank sent me a note to say that he's fine with the other amendment, and he waits for the committee, obviously, to decide on the policy matter. So let's start with this, colleagues. Are there any other proposals on changes to the bill?
Chairperson?
Yes.
Good morning. Sorry for interrupting. I just want to note an apology from Mr. Moletone. For today's meeting.
Thank you. Are there any other apologies? That's the only one, right?
Yes, no, that is the only one.
Yeah, Estelle's here, colleagues, because Nkululeko's got study leave this week, so we thank you very much, Estelle, for making yourself available. Many of us know Estelle, well, all of us should know Estelle through the Senate Committee. Some of us know her because of her previous role in the last term of Parliament. Now, can we move on then? Is there anything else? I take it that we only have one outstanding policy issue. Anybody for anything else? No. Go ahead. Yes.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think that the point I made last time was that we do feel that there needs to be more oversight over the minister and his appointment of the board. But certainly we don't see it as something that should hold this bill back. We actually think this is a good bill, and we think it's a good idea to proceed with it, but it's something to put in the back of our minds for the next time round.
Okay, thank you. I don't have a problem with that. In fact, I think what you're saying is something that we need to look into, having taken into account that what has happened in the last 2-3 weeks and what's in the public domain. I don't think that's a bad idea. But the usual debate will arise, Janet, which we've had for years and years. The right balance between parliamentary oversight and executive room to operate swiftly. Now, so it also depends, Dennis, the usual issues will arise. What would be the oversight role of Parliament in that regard? Think about it. Sometimes the executive needs to move swiftly, and they can't wait for parliamentary approval because Parliament might be in recess, especially between the early December and late January period, and you know what the score is, right? You know, the usual debate will come up, and somehow we usually find the right compromises. The executive doesn't always approve so much. The constitutional power resides with Parliament. So having said that, we have National Treasury. Welcome to everybody. I haven't started speaking who's here, but welcome from the Treasury team. And also welcome to Matthew Parks. You will recall we asked for some sort of exchange between us, Treasury, the Chair, and if I recall correctly, Kusatu. There were email exchanges, and finally we suggested to Kusatu they just write out what they want to say and present it here, as we often do. We encourage participation live till the last moment, whether it's Kusatu or Busa or traditional leaders or feminists, whatever. Right? We allow everybody. Secondly, there was a member of Parliament who is extremely articulate in English, who seemed to think that the House is sitting from 10 o'clock. It surprised me, but I said, well, it's too late now to call a meeting if that's the case. I understand it's at 2, and let me confirm, it is sitting at 2. Am I right? Anybody disagree with me? It's sitting at 14 hours today? Nope, right. So that's it. So we're not clashing, of course. So I hand over then to Kosatu. Can you, you have colleagues submitted to you last week and again yesterday, Kosatu's brief submission. So, Matthew, the first point you make here, can we skip that? Because there's no need, it's boring, right? What are you going to say to us? It's already there. Actually, you should apologize for wasting our time. Let's move on to the next one. Okay.
I think I'm now thoroughly intimidated by the Vanguard Party, Comrade Chair. But no,
because you're wearing red, we're going to just give you the
And we will note that the chairperson is very comfortable in blue chair. I don't know if it's the influence of Honorable Ryder, but blue is provided for in the flag, so there's no shame in it. It's a good color. Chair, I think just to thank members for giving us the chance to having raised our additional thoughts and comments in our written follow-ups to the committee. And I think also to appreciate the chance to say a few words today. And I think even the feedback from colleagues at Treasury is also helpful. So I think on the issue of the required amount of meetings for the board or committees per annum, I think that issue is resolved. I think Treasury has assisted, and it seems there's consensus there. So I think we're happy on that regard, Chair. Then, Chair, I think our only really remaining issue is about the mandatory rotation of auditing firms. And I think just to refresh honourable members' memory of our position was that that's already provided for in a rule by IRBA right now. It was introduced by IRBA to try to, I think, accelerate transformation in the sector, what is a heavily untransformed sector on one hand, but I think also to address the inherently compromised, cozy relationships at a time which in auditing firms, some of whom have had contracts with companies for 80 years, and the need to remove their profit relationship with the company and the fiduciary duty to provide oversight in an auditing format. And I think, Chair, as we said before, this is a matter of importance to the entire country and to workers. We've seen the consequence of corruption state-owned enterprises, entities, municipalities, and the private sector, Steinhoff, etc. So I think, Chair, we're very keen to see that progressive rule of IRBA being elevated into a requirement of law. I think for us it's a simple thing because the existing practice, there will be no disruption to the sector. They've already geared themselves for that 10-year auditing rotation firm rule. There will be no administrative burden to IRBA because that's already their policy. But I think for us, Chair, it's much more comforting to see it in law because of the stringent process to amend laws. You have to go to the department, to cabinet, to parliament. There's much more greater scrutiny. Whereas if it simply remains a rule of IRBA, it wouldn't take a rocket scientist auditing firm which wants to change it to offer a board member a lucrative incentive, cash, whatever. It's not been unheard of, Chair. We had originally proposed, Honourable Chair and members, that we felt the 10-year rule was too cumbersome. It should be too long. It should be reduced to 5 years. I think there was a useful kind of response from colleagues at Treasury to say perhaps insert in the bill that the firms have to be rotated every 10 years, but to equally empower the minister to reduce that period through regulation to a lower period. I think, Chair, that would be a fair compromise from our side. I think for us the most critical thing is to have simply that 10-year rule, rotation rule, being inserted in the law, and we'd be happy if the minister was empowered to look at a lower period as needed through regulation. I think the last thing, Comrade Chair, is that we were not convinced by the arguments from colleagues in government about the need not to put this now and to look at further bill down the road. We've experienced those kind of discussions previously, Chair, and I've always been disappointed. Bills, as colleagues would know, honourable members would know, rather, take at least 5 years. And we've seen, even in Treasury, one of the more efficient departments, with the Public Procurement Bill, the COFI Bill, those bills have been sitting in Treasury for years, despite even the President asking for it to be accelerated, even members of Parliament equally saying it. Chair, also, I think lastly, when they participated in the 2019 public hearings, our understanding that the auditing profession bill component of the Financial Matters Amendment Bill then was removed to allow for further discussion and consultation. If colleagues in government didn't do that, that can't be an excuse to kick the can down the road again. I think for us, it's a very straightforward amendment, Chair. it's literally inserting one clause and a sub-clause in the bill. Usually can be done by Parliament's legal advisors very easily. If it requires Chair to get a House mandate to insert it and even to hold an additional small public hearing, to go the extra mile to put on consultation, we'll be happy with to support that. But that would be a very minor delay, Chair, I think of up to 3 months at most, as compared to doing a new bill, which will take 5 years plus. I think lastly, Comrade Chair, we believe that the NCP has the full constitutional competence and mandate to amend legislation as needed. It doesn't require the permission or indulgence of Cabinet. Parliament is not a subcommittee of Cabinet or government. So, yeah, we hope we're sitting member this chair, and let me stop there and not talk too long. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, okay, I think you've covered the main point. For some clarity, why are you mentioning that the NCOP can make amendments and don't have to submit it to Cabinet to approve? Who said that? And what's the point of that? Obviously, we know that, but why do you raise that?
Sure. No, just very quickly, Honourable Chair, I think there was a comment by Treasury colleagues in the last meeting which indicated that if there's an amendment to the bill, it would have to go to the Department for its own internal processes, to Cabinet, etc. We hope that we had misunderstood that comment, but if we had heard it correctly, it would be a worrying comment, Chair, to somehow merge the spheres of responsibility between Parliament and the Executive. For us, it's very clear Parliament has got full legislative authority, etc. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was said. If it was said, it's utterly absurd. And we shouldn't entertain it. I think what was said was that, I don't know, I didn't pick it up. So maybe it was said. But when we said, look, let's not take that seriously. That's probably a joke or something. What I do recall was the point that the bill was rushed by the executive. For the life of me, I can't understand why. But anyway, let's not do that. It wasn't very compelling. But because, you know, the feeling was that if they did introduce those clause and other clauses that they might have wanted to introduce, and we do intend to introduce, we are told, it would have delayed the process in Cabinet. Firstly, they have to consent and so on. Now, colleagues, can we move over then to Treasury? Can you respond to that? I don't respond to this last point. I mean, it's an absurd point, right? Somebody should just educate the person who said that, if indeed anybody did. Okay, so we're not entertaining that. There isn't time for that. Let me just see who's here from. Oh, Momo is here. And Impi must be here. I don't see her yet. Oh, you're there. Okay, right. So who's going first?
Momo will come.
Momo, okay.
Yeah, Chair. No, thank you, Chair. It's a bit late to say Happy New Year. And with COVID, I don't know if it's going to be so happy as we would like. But
yeah.
Morning, everyone. Yeah, I think we don't have a problem with mandatory audit rotation. And I'm not sure what problem COSATU is trying to solve. Because it is already a rule and it applies. And I think that generally we would have a problem where we take, you know, rules and so on from regulators. If you just follow the way we've done it at Twin Peaks, that a lot of these things are set by standards, evolving standards happening overseas. And yes, sometimes we are ahead of the curve. And once it's a rule, it gets implemented and it is being implemented. So I'm not sure what value there is to put it into harder an act of parliament, because that also carries some dangers. The danger being that when you want to change the rule, depending on how the wording is in the act, it may cause problems. I think that given that this rule has been adopted by IRBA and is being implemented, and you know there will be some teething problems, Chair. That, for example, you know, what do you do with for example, for the major banks, we have dual auditors, not one, two, and how do you rotate? Because the reality is that with most listed companies, they're still going to rotate amongst the big four. So the kind of hold that the Big Four has over the audit industry is a worldwide problem, not just a South African problem, because investors, and most of our investors are from overseas, but even domestic investors, place more reliance, even with all the scandals and all the problems that the Big Four themselves have had, still place more reliance on the Big Four than on other auditors. And all over the world, you see lots of initiatives to get the incentives right for these auditing firms. In fact, if you look at today's business day, you'd see that KPMG has decided not to provide consultancy services to JSE-listed companies. And similarly, Deloitte paying a fine of 1 billion rand over Steiner. Now, whether those are sufficient measures is one thing. But just given all the problems in the audit process, and I should add that Treasury is very concerned about a lot of the weaknesses around the audit process. And let me just spell them out. They not only in potential conflict of the services that they offer to their clients, but also I think that if we look at the corruption that has taken place, for me, the role of audit committees, the role of the external auditors, even, by the way, I should add the oversight by the Auditor General. Why did it not pick up any of the problems from, say, 2010 to 2017? It's only then that you started getting negative audits and so on. So I'm saying that, we do need to do much more on audit process, and that's why the minister announced last year in the last year's budget that he'd be setting up a panel, because I do think that more fundamental changes are required. And to the extent, and of course with COVID, I must admit that yes, we did not go ahead just with COVID. You've had all these other priorities that come up, but I do think we need to go back to those. And, you know, those reforms mustn't be delayed. I'd agree with that. I mean, I think that we do want a stricter regime. So, Chair, I think I'm saying why pick on just this, you know, this particular rule by itself is not going to solve all those problems in audit profession. I think we need a comprehensive approach. We'd be very happy to work with COSATU and everyone else, because I accept that you're all concerned. If we can't place reliance on what auditors say, it's impossible for investors, for the community outside, for government to know that things, when things are going wrong, or that they are going wrong. And in fact, can I say, Chair, I would even say that all the audit companies that slept through 7 years of corruption, even when it was in the newspapers, if they offered no value for money, they should be paying back the money to the state for all the audits that misled government. So we would want to go back to that more comprehensive approach. I think that with regard to this particular rule, you know, the concern that we have, and it may seem trivial, but it's not. So firstly, as I said, why put it in hard legislation when it's still an evolving area? The rule is in place. It's been implemented. There may be some teething problems here and there. I think the regulators must have the flexibility to deal with those issues. And I would add that given that this clause, if you remember, Chair, in 2017, I mean, when you were Chair of SCOP, you know, you had all the audit companies coming. Yes, they didn't like this provision. And my fear is that if you're going to put a clause in, it's not going to be simply that it then goes back to the NA and it will be quickly adopted. It's a completely new clause. It will then, I think, all these companies will want to come in. It's in a way stirring a hornet's nest. They would all want to come, make comments. And our worry is that, and if we don't go through that process, it may lead to legal challenges to the bill. And we feel that the provisions that are there now, which is really empowering IRBA to take action against all these deviant auditing firms, that would be delayed. And I think our team has explained that, yes, we wanted this law, as you know, before the elections, and because of time, we had to take it out, and yes, the bill was put forward, it's, you know, other things took priority, and not all Treasury's fault, I don't want to ever say it's Parliament's fault, but, you know, the bill has been there. So, Chair, I think for these very pragmatic reasons, I would appeal to COSATU. We've got the mandatory auditing. It doesn't by itself deal with the problems of the audit profession. I don't think we should make this so rigid now as to put it in the Act. It is a law, it takes effect, it is a rule, it takes effect already. And the risk that we're putting in now to come with a change like this, which will be contested by the auditing firms, because as I said, they don't like this, okay? And I think that you may just slow this down to much more than 3 months if you go ahead. And having said that, we're quite open, I think, to push on the panel of the auditing firms to look at the problems and to work with all key stake players who want to put in an input on how audit processes work and what the incentive structure is around it. I don't know if my colleague, the Skaran and MP want to add on.
Okay, Karen, MP?
Nothing from me.
Karen?
Thank you, Chair. I thought MP was going first. No, I think Mama has covered it very well. And, yeah, I don't have anything else to add. Thank you.
Okay, now, MP did go earlier than you had nothing to say. Look, can we then hand over to members who wants to speak? It's still really helped me along. We can use this management device, or you can just, I mean, look, we should be relatively... I mean, let's just move. We want to speak. Just stay, Chairperson, and speak. I mean, really, we'll put your hand up, but fine. Whatever. Who wants to say anything? I see the hand up of Dennis Ryder. Who else? I don't see anybody else. Right. Okay. Done. Can you go ahead, Dennis?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Gee, I'm going to have to ask my wife to bake a cake to mark today because I think it's one of the few times that Momo and myself are in full agreement with each other. I think he made a very compelling argument and I think what he's placed forward is absolutely I'm in agreement with. So I think Kasatra's point is valid. Once again, I think maybe that taking a longer run up at it is probably the advisable course of action. As was indicated, the implementation of this is going to be quite a difficult and tricky area. So I think leaving it in the regulation, certainly for now, or the rules, certainly for now, is the preferred course of action. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Any other members? Tell you, does anybody else who wants to speak?
No, Chairperson. I'm not seeing any more raised hands.
I see very few ANC MPs here. In fact, I can't find a single ANC MP here.
Chairperson, Ms. Mamaregani, Mr. Kiva, they are present. Yeah. I think we're missing Ms. Mashlangu and Mr. Njadu so far.
Okay. All right. Any comments from any other party? EFF is not here. ANC? Okay, can I just raise some questions? Frank, are you here? Frank, I think you're here. Am I right?
Chair, I'm here. I'm here.
Yeah. All right, let's start with the first basic issue, right? We can discuss the policy issues, but we need to be clear about the legal framework. So, because if the legal framework rules it out, then clearly it's not practicable and we'll have to, if we agree with what's being said by COSATU, we'll put in our report at most. But we asked you this last week, you recall what you said. I may have misunderstood you, so I don't want to summarize what you said. So as I understood it. So the first question is it a completely new clause? If so, even if we want, say we want to accept what goes out of this, what do we do? That is, if it's a completely new clause. And if it's not, then presumably it'll be treated like any other clause. And we can do what we want in terms of what we normally do. Okay, over to you, Frank.
Yes, Chair, it is a... I would say it's a new clause, Chair. I would err on the side of caution. Although it's been raised a few times in the public hearings. It's been raised since 2018. It's been raised in all the public hearings, the National Assembly as well as here, but it's never been in the bill. It's never been a policy position until now that people are saying, let's consider it. But I think if I need to give legal advice in a chair, I would say let's err on the side of caution. But that's... The caution, as I said last time, Chair, I said there's two sides of this coin. One side is the rules of the National Assembly and how we're creating precedent vis-a-vis the rules. And you and I had that discussion. Are we not limiting, should we interpret it to extend powers of a committee or should we rather keep the powers more tightly to the House? The more important thing, Chair, and my colleagues from Treasury raised it, is the risk we take with challenges if we think that this is nothing new and we can just go ahead. In that regard, Chair, my advice is that one will probably have to get some kind of input from companies who didn't think that this would come into the bill at all, or who didn't make input, who thought it's not necessary to make input on it because it wasn't in the original bill. So to err on the side of caution there, one would say to those companies, do you want to have an say about this provision we intend putting in, just to be 100% sure that we have complied with those public participation provisions, Chair. So that would be my conservative approach to this, Chair. I hope I've answered some of the questions, Chair.
Okay. Frank, were you there at the NA processing of this bill?
Yes, Chair.
And when Kosatu raised this, were there any other stakeholders who commented on it?
Chair, I will speak on the top of my head. There were people commenting on it. There were resistance against it, as far as I know, from some of the industries. Mm-hmm. And then there was also just saying, but it is a rule already. I don't know the details, Chair, but it was a lot was said, but it is a rule, and we can just stick with that. So it wasn't considered to be part of the bill at that stage, Chair.
Okay, we can look at that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's the first issue. So, Matthew, there's a formidable problem here. I'll ask you to come back. But before you do, I just want to respond to what Tracy had to say. So, firstly, I think, you know, my own view, and obviously the study group will meet on Thursday to take this thing forward. Firstly, well, if it's ruled out, Frank, and committee, then there's no need to do anything because we can just put in our report that this is what we feel. So for those reasons, also, I need to respond to Tracy. Firstly, I agree that, you know, you should allow, you can't have regulators and then hem them in and be over-prescriptive. I don't think the relationship between Parliament and regulators has to be so tight. That's my view. I'm open to persuasion about the specific case, but I don't think it should be tight. Otherwise, why form regulators? Then Parliament can do everything itself, which of course it can't do. So that's the first one. I agree in general. But then there are specific cases where you might want to say, this is too important, and therefore you can't leave it to rules and regulators. And the question members need to think about, isn't this a case where it is an exception to that general notion of the relationship between parliamentary committees, parliament, and the regulators? That's a question we have to ask ourselves. Look at the horrific, heinous activity that was over the last 10 years or more globally, but also very much in our own country.
They have been complicit in state capture, illicit financial flows, and so on. That they're going to hoo-ha and make a noise is typical. The hypocrisy of it is they themselves, some other degree in many of these activities. And I'm saying all of them, I'm certainly not speaking about every individual. So, you know, it's the normal rattling and rabble-rousing of people who do wrong, and when they are circumscribed by democratic parliament, they act, you know, as if they are being treated unfairly. So I think members need to think about that. Isn't this an example where, you know, there is a need for prescription here and not leaving it just to hoops? Then if you look at IRBA, they've just been dissolved. IRBA was regarded as one of the shining institutions in this country, as I thought. Of course, Denison then will say, so what? What's the measure of a shining institution? The body, so look, well, he's entitled to that view in his party. But to me, in my 5 years on the NA side, they were amongst the better institutions. Certainly, as I told you previously, in the last 5 years, those of us who were there in finance got to know that our auditing standards, bizarrely, if you look at the amount of wrongdoing that's taking place, but our auditing standards were regarded amongst the top two or three. In fact, we came first a few years and IRBA was highly regarded. Thirdly, so IRBA's just been disbanded. You know, Parliament's not susceptible to disbandment in that way. So how can we trust? And the minister just announced or dissolves IRBA, and we still don't really know why. I mean, I don't know if the NA committee is arranging to have a meeting to find out why and its implications. But I mean, IRBA is a bit of a mess in the public domain with accusations and counter-accusations from what I pick up in the media. Then yes, I don't think anybody had an illusion, Momo, that the rotation will inevitably mean transformation. We understood it will be a rotation of the big four and they will collude if they have to. But, you know, at least it's a step forward. It's part of an ongoing process of transformation. What the committee felt then, colleagues, and to a lesser extent, I think even the DA certainly, was that, you know, this is a fundamentally untransformed sector and it has to be transformed. And this is like the thin edge of the wedge, maybe, and so on. Then, I don't know what is meant by a comprehensive approach. Sometimes the executive, I'm not saying, Momo, you're doing this, uses this as a way of deferring or deferring something they don't agree with. So they will come. I'm not saying you, Momo, but you said nothing to me, at least. I have a right to have my own view, but ultimately the majority. But you said nothing to me that convinces me. I mean, what you're talking about is a long haul. A comprehensive approach, and so on. You're going to deal with this in a multifaceted way, I think you're saying, and so on. But that doesn't mean that as part of the multi-pronged approach, you know, we shouldn't do what COSATU is proposing. It's not because COSATU proposes. In fact, let me tell you, committee members, colleagues, some people, including maybe COSATU, thinks I'm their acolyte. No. Actually, as soon as Matthew started making this point, it hit me immediately. It's making sense. So if BUSA had raised it, or the Free Market Foundation had raised it, I would still have supported it. I don't operate like that. I mean, I'm driven by ideology and values, obviously. But I'm also pragmatic. I'm playing a particular role where you're required to be pragmatic, and this makes perfect sense to me. So as soon as he started it, and COSATU knows, I told him to jump in the lake. Matthew and I have had a huge fight. You know, half the time I agree with them and half the time I don't. This thing also applies to the other structures that I identify with. So this is good. Whether it came from, you know, some individual NGO or whoever, I mean, I look at the specific merits of it. So what I'm saying here is, you see, I've been around a long time in college. I'm not saying Momo is an excellent official. I respect him, though I disagree with him. I respect him enormously. His integrity, his hard work, his evergreen commitment. I mean, he's one of the finest civil servants I've had the privilege of engaging with. So it's not about Momo personally. I think Momo might say some of the things I do, as I've said before, given the vantage point I occupy, and I might well say exactly what he says if I was the DTC of Treasury. So it's not personal, but, you know, often colleagues are found half knowingly and half unwittingly. Members who represent the executive officials and ministers and deputy ministers, they mean well, but they also, you know, I mean, it's partly, they know this is not possible. So people say, okay, we're coming with another bill, and, you know, we've got other changes. We've been through this before. So they, I mean, agreement with that, you know, that if it was legally tenable, Frank, you really should be clear about this, because you're setting a precedent here. We haven't had this situation before. Then we can't do much. But this answer that the executive officials gave, you know, we're coming with another bill and so on, it's not compelling, is it? It'll take years, and given COVID and given the state of the cabinet and so on, and Treasury, no doubt, it's not going to happen immediately. There are many other bills in the pipeline that obviously come before this, so I'm not compelled by that. No, indeed, am I compelled by the view, as I said last week, Treasury, that you couldn't have done something. And you know what? I don't want to fight with Momo, but frankly, this has nothing to do with Parliament. The financial matters amendment came to us very late. Colleagues who are not here, I can get Adam, we can tell you the date it came to us, how many other bills we had. Were it not for the persistence of the NA, we wouldn't have passed those bills, NA committee. In fact, the fact is that the NA committee was prepared to process the IRBA provision. It's on record. It's the NCOP committee that rightly, I agree with it, said no. In fact, there's nothing to hide. I think it was in the public domain. The then NCOP chairperson herself said, no, we are not going to process the Financial Matters Amendment Bill because so many bills have come to us from the NA and the term is about to end on the eve of the May 2019 election. So Charles Appiah, the current chief of Tresa Moai and Tandi Modise, who said no to this, not us in the NA. We are prepared to do it. But I agreed with them then, and I even more now, that so the problem resides directly with the executive. They came very late with the bill. Now, when I say this, I don't reflect on Momo or MP or whoever else is here from Treasury. They work very hard. So, you know, but it's not true that Parliament can be blamed for this. Oh, not at all. It's just Parliament did its job. Well, Dennis, you'd be interested. And they said, no. MPP said, no, we're not processing it. And you know, I accepted it. So, you know, and we were pushing for like years. You look at our annual report, colleagues. I'm just reporting to them more because you know all of this. MP knows some of this. And that fellow, what's his name, the previous CEO? Bernard knows this. Bernard and I had endless exchanges, Karen. You can ask him over the phone. And I said, no, Bernard, we are going to prioritize this. We're waiting for Treasury. And we raised it repeatedly, especially, just to give you the side of Parliament on the story, especially when it surfaced about how horrible the auditors will be. So no blame can be laid to Parliament. I think NCOP did the right thing. They don't push over. And we can't go to them as the executive so late. On the matter of the 10-year rotation, we've discussed this. Right. We had endless, hearings. I remember, Frank, we had it on a Friday once and so on. Our view as a committee was, in principle, we support rotation of auditors at that time. But we had a difficulty with the way IRBA was engaging with the big auditors and others. They were engaging in a way that we felt wasn't sufficiently necessary, wasn't sufficiently adequate, really. Let's put it that way. So we pleaded to them to defer it for 3 months. And of course, we had no power, Frank, you'll recall, you told us and others did, to to actually force them, nor the Treasury to defer it. I think Treasury is BOD, some other officials were. Don't go for it now, you know, so on. Then there was the threat, ever present, always when there are major policy changes to be made by the Big Four. Oh, we're going to take it to court and so on. But I haven't seen anything in the media, so Treasury, can you tell us, did they actually go to court? Which is not to say, colleagues, they will not go to court now that it's becoming, well, if we also choose something in the law. Obviously, now it's a different ballgame. I have no empathy for them. No. I'm not prepared to discuss all of that here. Anybody wants to discuss it, they can talk to me offline. No, I don't have any empathy for them, really. Rushing to the court. Not after what has happened over the last 10 years. And not after they get away with what they get away with. No, absolutely not. There are also the reverse side of state capture, many of them. Not all. Not every individual in these companies. Where would we have been, people have asked, rightly so, had Parliament exercised its oversight role over state capture? Very valid question. I have my own views about what colleagues and ex-colleagues have said in the Zondo Commission, but it is a very valid question, which was raised by ourselves in this Parliament. We said it about state capture. You can look at the Hansard and so on, the former chief whip, the former standing committee and finance chairperson. So, you know, people should get a more balanced view, I think, who were not here last time, around the last term. Then, on the issue of this comprehensive approach. Firstly, I think it resides on two premises that I don't necessarily agree with. One is the auditors are capable of being won over through engagements, and where the Treasury has got the strength, second, it's not so strong as it was 10 years ago, and is not as taken as seriously by the auditors or others, notwithstanding the excellent work done by people like Momo and so on. So, you know, there are another 3 points here, but I think I'll cover the ground, and I'm not sure what I wrote here in my handwriting. I don't know why I wrote it, because my computer is troubling me. But those are my points. So basically, having said what I've said, can I hand over to COSATU and then Treasury and then members, and then we have to decide what we're going to do. Right. Matthew?
Sure. No, thanks. Thanks, Honorable Chair. And yeah, I think I also want to share your views on Momo. I think he is one of our, you know, hardworking, unappreciated public servants who really does it to deserve appreciation. Yeah, I think just to kind of reset the motivation for COSATU here is that we think all persons who oppose corruption, be it in Parliament, Treasury, COSATU, etc., they support this rule. This rule makes sense for dealing with the incestuous relationships. It makes sense for accelerating transformation of really ever untransformed white male-dominated industry. So our motivation really was to enshrine this rule, to give it the weight and the protection that it deserves. So it's not new policy, it's just taking an existing one and elevating it and making sure it's going to be retained and strengthened. Chair, look, I think as COSATU, we can't afford to take state capture lightly or even capture in the private sector. When our members are losing their jobs left and right in the pedestals, in private sector companies, when public servants and other workers have seen their pensions being looted, and there's almost never been any consequence for the auditing companies. At best, they might get a slap on the wrist in terms of a fine, but I don't recall any auditor, honorable chairperson, being given audit overalls by correctional services. So I think, Chair, our thing is really is to protect it. And I think we had seen in the last committee meeting with the explanation by the legal advisors about how easy it is to change the existing rule, that the board can simply sit as a few individuals. They can then publish in the Government Gazette for comment. We know very few people will read Government Gazettes, ask for comments after 30 days, and then the board is fully empowered to make a change. So in other words, within 2 months, they can delete this thing with very little public scrutiny. Whereas if you take amending a legislation, we all know how exhaustive and extensive it is, from the department to cabinet to two houses of parliament, political parties across the aisle, the public participating. It would be much more difficult to delete that mandatory rotation principle in an act. It would be very difficult. even if a minister wanted to do it. So I think that's the fundamental issue. And Chair, look, it really is a key transformational tool. And we're now, I think, 27 years into democracy, quarter of a century, and we're still having this untransformed sector. So it is a useful thing to uplift some of those incestuous relationships, to bring competition to the sector, to advance black auditors who really have been blocked out of these opportunities. Chair, I think if we took the resistance from the sector to the bill, then we wouldn't have this bill. In the public hearings in 2019 and 2020 in the NA, auditing companies opposed the entire bill. They said, don't allow the search and seizure, don't allow access to IRBA, don't do this, don't do that. So we listened to them, and as you're saying correctly, Chair, these are persons with compromised interests who would have no bill. If the auditing sector felt that the rule itself was dubious constitutionally, they would long ago taken it to court. They haven't done that. So we're not sure what is the argument for opposing putting the bill now. If we support, and we assume all of us do support the IRBA rule, we haven't heard any substantive policy reason for not putting it there. Chair, the issue of delays, I mean, we think for honest governors is being a little bit disingenuous with all due respect. What is the point for organizations, for the public, to raise issues in public hearings if they're not going to be even responded to? Even at least to say this doesn't make sense and dismiss it, that's fine. But it was raised in 2019, not just by ourselves, but in fact, but also by the former CEO of IRBA, Bernardo Gullet, and I think others also raised in support. We raised it again last year in the NA hearings. And so you ask, so if government doesn't like something, they can just simply ignore it. It really makes it difficult to know to what extent they actually take public hearings sufficiently. I would say, Comrade Chair, that space, as you said, in 2019 was given to Treasury to undertake further consultations on the bill. Because I think colleagues, honourable members, have felt it was quite complicated, it couldn't be rushed, etc. And if government hasn't done that, why should we then be held back as a consequence? We do want to see the bill being passed quickly. We don't think inserting a simple clause in it could delay in perpetuity. It'll be a lot quicker to add 3 months than to simply say, let's wait 5 years for another bill. Chair, I think for us going forward, it's not that complicated an issue. And we would agree with the legal advisor about going the extra mile, making sure all the rules and constitutional prescripts for public participation are covered. Getting a mandate from the House, we think, is not an inordinately difficult thing to do. And we will support and welcome even additional public hearings on this thing to make sure everybody feels fully inclusive. And that can only help to enrich the issue. I think the last 2 points, Honourable Chair, is that there is legal precedence for this. I think as the Treasury officials had pointed out quite helpfully, that in the Companies Act, there is already a rule, a five-year rotation rule, for auditors within an auditing firm every 5 years. So when you have a legal precedence, that has never been challenged in court. Chair, we haven't had any resistance to that from Treasury. But also, Chair, there is limitations to it because it only speaks to individual auditors within an auditing firm. Yes, it's a useful thing, but still doesn't address the fundamental conflict of interest of a firm which wants to protect profit versus its fiduciary duties to hold a company's books to account. I think lastly, Honourable Chair, without wanting to state the obvious, but we have to state it, I think as COSATU and our members are really exhausted by the never-ending spectacle of corruption across society, government and the private sector. We really want to see government and parliament taking clear, firm, decisive action on it. And some of that does require legislative interventions to strengthen the rules. I think simply to say that to give lip service or platitude that we're attacking it doesn't hold weight when you have public servants who are now facing the reality of 4 years of no wage increase. We're having workers in SAA, SA Express going home with no jobs. The economy is in huge crisis because of it. So I think for us, we really want to see decisive action. And it is a point of frustration for us as COSATU, lastly, Chair, that whenever we raise issues of intervention on corruption, be it on banning the wives and children of politicians from members of the state or other issues, we're always told, no, that's not necessarily, it's too extremist, we can't do it. But we all know the consequences of us being too soft on corruption, Chair. But let me stop there. Thank you once again.
Treasury?
Yes, Chair. Chair, look, I don't think we differ at all. I think think that, you know, this for me is just a sort of technical issue about whether we put it in the bill and so on. I think what we've said is, you know, we do think that there needs to be a deeper process, which shouldn't take forever, Chair, I agree. It should be a quicker process to identify problems in other processes. And though the bill does deal with some of it, liability, I think, of auditors to make them much more accountable than they have been, and including, as you said, Chair, I think they have to answer for what happened between 2010 and 2017, when, you know, we got clean audits for Eskom, for Danel, for SAA, you know. I don't know why we paid those auditors. They have to pay back the money for their failure to see what was in newspapers and so on. So I think we agree on all of those things, and we must get those things done. I think what we're saying is you know, the bill is here. It does strengthen the Erdogan's powers. It can have much tougher sanctions. In my view, it doesn't go far enough. But let's focus on it today. And I think what we're saying is, the mandatory rotation is there now. It is a rule. So I'm not sure what problem we're trying to solve by putting it into even harder legislation. And I think that you do need the discretion of IRBA where there are some teething problems that may come up. So give them the space, because, you know, the next 2 to 3 years, I think, will be critical as you have rotation. We see how it works. They need to be able to resolve small issues that come without moving away from the principle. The principle, I think, has been established. Okay, I think I also would just like to say, I think, you know, the point you made that Treasury is not strong or it's weaker than what it was, I don't really buy that. I think that this is a story that seems popular in the press today. I can tell you that I think the Treasury continues to have a lot of expertise. There's very hard-working colleagues I have. Yes, the times are tougher, but it's a topic for another day. But I thought I should just mention that I think the Treasury is still, I think, very skilled at playing the role it needs to play. And sure, you know, we continue to have areas that get expanded. So sure, the area of auditing, the regulatory side, I think what I've said about the Audit Professions Act, it's still very old-style regulatory approach, okay? Which, if you look at the way we moved on the Twin Peak system, where we really sharpened the powers of the regulators, gave them much more powers, was quite a different approach. So I think the more fundamental reform for me, for the audit profession, is to modernize, I think, the approach in the law. These changes don't do that. These changes just deal with the urgent problems that we need to put in, that we need to deal with now for you know, when auditors are really not doing their job and, in fact, deliberately looking the other way.
Is it really on the same way?
Chair, sir, I want to ask, Gillian Bailey has details about the litigation regarding the rule. Treasury is not involved, so she can give a...
Fine. To the committee. Gillian, are the rules being challenged in court, and where is the process?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, there is currently litigation in progress. It commenced in 2018. The applicants are seeking an order to... I review and set aside or declare unlawful the introduction of the rule relating to MAFR. The current status is that we filed a full set of records and an answering affidavit on behalf of the IBA, and we're currently awaiting the applicant's replying affidavit.
So in which court is it?
Oh, Chair, I don't know.
Is it a high court or
where? Through you, Chair. Yes. Thank you.
This is Rebecca, the legal director at IRBA. I'm sorry for joining late. I was in the it's in the High Court in Pretoria and was instituted in 2018.
And when will it be heard?
At this stage, most likely not in this current financial year, considering that their own reply affidavit, after which we also have to file heads of arguments and get a directive before we can get a court date.
That's 3 years later.
Probably later next year.
Oh my God. Right, okay. All right, fine. Okay, over to members. Thank you, my friend. Over to members. Who wants to speak? Yes, Dennis.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, look, I think Matthew actually ended up arguing against referring this thing back with a new clause. As he said, this is not something new. It's merely elevating it from a rule into legislation. In other words, it already exists. Now, I haven't heard a compelling argument why it needs to be elevated. So, you know, something that is being tried, tested, and implemented slowly. And, you know, there's massive benefit to that because, as Mr. Mamoni had pointed out, you know, the implementation of this is going to be incredibly difficult, especially when you get to sizable corporations that are employing two of the big four. Now, what you're going to have is that as soon as you start introducing legislation like this, noting that there are the big four, and people have to use two of them at a time, okay, that's kind of guaranteeing the other big two business coming forward. So it's creating an anti-competitive situation where what you will find is that, you know, audit fees are going to start rocketing because people know, look, it doesn't matter what we do or what we charge, we have to be used. So, you know, our turn will come, you know, this famous thing, that our turn to eat. Yeah, that's going to now apply to the auditing profession as well. And you know, that's something that we really should not be part of. So, you know, elevating it into the legislation at this stage, I think we need a longer, slower run at this. And to just throw this out there as an intervention of the NCOP and a Section 75 at the end of the process without having good due diligence into the implications of what our amendment is going to do is going to be quite dangerous. I do think that taking a slower, measured approach, keeping in the rules for now, letting people know, guys, this is coming. We may make this part of the next bill when it comes through, so that people are able to adapt and the industry is able to adapt to this thing over time and do it properly. Now, what Matthew also said is that mistake. And that is part of what this bill in its present form is trying to achieve. It's trying to improve the disciplinary processes, trying to improve the ability of IRBA to enforce their standards and so on down onto auditors. So, you know, by pushing this thing back, because, look, we're going to have a draft clause drawn up. We're going to then have to put that out for public participation. It's going to have to go back to the NA, blah, 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 blah. This is going to take us a good few months to process the amendment. So for that to happen, we're going to be stalling the implementation of these better disciplinary processes that IRBA so desperately needs. And those disciplinary processes are things that they've come to us and said, people, our processes are there, they're working okay, but we need stronger disciplinary processes. And if you look at what clauses we went through in a clause-by-clause reading, it was the disciplinary issues that formed the majority of it. So what I'm saying is, let's get this bill out there. Let's investigate properly what the implications of the mandatory rotation is going to be and see if it is actually implementable. Because trying to put in a clause that's not implementable, that's going to cause this act to be challenged as soon as it's printed, is then going to stymie other processes of IRBA, which are not going to help the bigger picture of things. So, you know, we have rotating your auditors is good practice. Let's be honest, it is good practice, and I think that's generally agreed and accepted. The fact is that sometimes there are compelling reasons for keeping your auditors, but that's why you also have things in the bigger corporations like audit committees, independent audit committees, et cetera, et cetera. So taking too quick a run at this, Chair, I think is a little bit heavy-handed. There's validity to the concept, but it needs further investigation before we go ahead and pull the trigger. Thank you.
Any other members? Okay, all right. Many members are not here, so we are unable to obviously conclude the matter. Now, I'm sure, Dennis, Matthew can easily reply to you, and then you're going to reply to him, but we spent an hour on this. Several members whose views are important are not here, so I'm not sure there's any value in taking this forward. I had indicated last week we can't vote on the bill this Thursday, so that meeting is called off itself. And we will see when we come back to this bill, because from next week we've got the budget process, but we will not delay finalizing this bill until the budget is over, obviously. Today what we're going to do, when we just finish tie up this policy matter, is look at the clauses by clause and adopt them informally. So the only issue that we are standing to finalize this policy issue and then vote formally on the bill. So we're talking about a half an hour meeting sometime next week or the week after. So we'll have done our part and then take it to the House. So firstly, I would like to say that I just want some clarity from you, Frank. So since we cannot really, strictly speaking, you know, explain to us what we do is write a report to Parliament requesting the in a committee to consider our proposed amendment. And we can't actually amend the bill. They have proposed amendment in a report to the House to refer to the NA, right? If I've got that right, the question I want to ask you is, who will have these public hearings? Let's say we decide on adopting this approach of making it legislative, the mandatory rotating. Who would actually have to have the hearings? Because we can have the hearings on our side, Frank. But hell, what can we do? We can just refer it to the NA. And the NA will find it difficult to go by what we've done unless they themselves have had hearings. So firstly, could we not instead in a report, let's say we do decide on this. I'm just looking at all possibilities, Frank, so we don't come back to you. And when we meet as an ANC study group, we can take our decision without now being oblivious to the consequences, legal and regulatory and other. The question I'm asking you then is, do we have to have the public hearings, or can we just write in a report that we feel it should be made legally necessary, this mandatory rotation, and the request that the NA takes this forward, that they have to have the public hearings? So the first point to you is, do we have to have public hearings or do they? And if we do have the public hearings, it still means they'll have to have public hearings. The next point is, I just want to observe, I think 3 years later, as I was saying to our colleague from Irba, who is the legal advisor, and that actually, it's 2021. They went to court in 2018, the auditors. So we won't even know the outcome of this until next year. My understanding is the auditors were in the NA process. Needless to say, it seems they opposed it. The Treasury is saying it's a tactical issue. It does maybe strengthen the Cosato argument and the tactical issue. So it's a difference in tactics, not one of a principle or value. Again, often adversaries in a debate say, oh, it's a tactical issue, and often it's not, but I'm not saying it applies in this case. I don't know why Treasury keeps saying, what is the problem that you are seeking to resolve by making this prescriptive? It's been set out very clearly by Matthew. So I don't know why Treasury repeats this. What you're basically saying is, don't agree that this is the way to solve the problem. You can't ask, what is the problem you're trying to address here? Because they are being very clear, and so have our actions. And if we don't understand each other, well, unfortunately, there's nothing more I can do, certainly, and I don't know how much Cassandra can do, but... So that's like a bewildering question, Momo. Then, I didn't mean to say Treasury is limp and listless and pathetically weak. What I'm trying to say is the credibility of government as a whole, our government, has gone down, including with the private sector. And Treasury, like every other department, doesn't carry the weight, understandably, that it previously did. This has got nothing to do with the individuals who work ever so hard. No one's questioning that. Even Cassandra says that. So that's the point I'm making. That I find it hard to believe that 15 years ago, government and Treasury were not more credible of social forces, civil society, and also the private sector and the unions. Well, never unions because of the ideological divergence, but, well, Cassandra at least, I don't know about other unions so much. Then, Dennis, with due respect, I don't understand what you're saying, but let's forget it, right? Because, you know, you're saying let's explore how this thing, well, I don't know how you need to explore, like, what do you need to do? If we were to do this, if we were to take the approach you are, it could apply to every major clause of a bill, and especially one that's transformative. So what you're saying about this particular proposal could apply to every clause, actually, particularly those that are far-reaching in transformation. Insofar as you raise questions about, you know, it's our time to eat and look what it will mean and so on. Those questions came up, by the way, in 2017, I think it was, or 18, when we looked at the rules. But we're not going to agree. You know, on the whole, my own view, and it's only mine, the argument for including it in the bill seems to me stronger than the argument for leaving it to a comprehensive process and exploration and so on. That's my view. But we will see how things go. The only difficulty I have, and as a chairperson, I have to be, perhaps the onus is more on a chair and the secretary and the legal authority to ensure that we are legally and constitutionally, in terms of parliament norms and rules, sound. So, Frank, you are making a big decision, for me at least, because of your personally, I might have to give in and say, okay, we can't do it and write a strong report to Parliament and take these issues up in the debate. But so frankly, you know, for me, the most constraining part of wanting to persuade my comrades in the ANC to implement this in the law is your argument, Frank, about the issues. I really plead with you that we exchange outside this office, outside this offline, and let's see, you know, if I understand you better, because, you know, we have to be clear that this is a completely new thing, and if need be, Frank, we will ask you to write a one page or something, so that, and that you may have to do that. So we need to give you time to mull over what you're saying. And you know, we won't put you under enormous pressure. So I don't think, colleagues, there's a point going forward. Yeah, each of us has had a time, so to speak. You know? And I don't see we're going to find resolution here. So may I suggest we move on from here, with the understanding that we're going to go through clause by clause, unless people want to keep the debate open, I know Dennis, you want to reply to me. I know Kosatu wants to reply to you. I know Treasury wants to reply to me and Kosatu. And we can carry on. But I think we've covered this ground for a good hour and about 7 minutes. I think it's 11:10. Maybe we lost the first 3 minutes. But we got going at about 3 minutes after 10. So I don't see much point, colleagues, continuing the debate for now. What I'm suggesting is let's go to clause by clause. Let's mull over this issue and see when we can meet again, maybe late next week, Thursday, maybe, or early the following week, and finalize the matter. Is that agreeable? Partly because we don't have our members here as well, which is deeply regrettable, and I'll just do that offline. So if that's agreeable...
Agree, Chairperson.
Thank you, my friend. So can we go on then to look at clause by clause? Kosatu, you can leave if you want, because the only issue was there. And I don't know which officials of Treasury are relevant. Those who want to stay can stay. Irba, you might want to forego some of your officials and keep one here. I can't tell you what to do, but I'm simply saying all we're doing now is looking at the bill clause by clause, and I've been through it. Let me start then with Frank. Frank, do you want to say anything? Esther, do you want to say anything? We requested both of you to assist in regard to checking that everything's in order and so on. Frank, you want to start? Esther, do you want to say anything?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on the bill, I was asked a few things. One, to check cross-referencing with other provisions in the Act. Those are all good. Also, cross-referencing to the Companies Act. That was all good. That were all good, all the cross-referencing. I was also requested to look whether the search and seizure and the warrant that underpins those procedures when it's non-voluntary, whether that is consistent with the FICA amendment bill, but not the 2015 one, the 2016 one, which we reconsidered after the president at the time then referred it back, and we had senior counsel Jeremy Gauntlett making some input to even strengthen that provision beyond what the Constitutional Court guided Parliament to when those provisions before. So the bill before the committee, Chairperson, is the one that follows that 2016 reconsidered or resubmitted bill that came back from the president. So there's no problem with that. It's not a carbon copy, but it's in substance 100% the same. And then I was also just asked to look at whether the document that Treasury is presenting, which is now the Consolidated Act, whether that is consistent with the P version of the bill, and it is. There was a mistake in last time, but that's more procedural check. So that's all there. Chair, just on the question, I'll just be 1 minute, and I hope I'm not taking you back. Of course, if the committee wants to do something to change the law, then we have to change the law here for the NA to reconsider it. If we just put something in the report, of course, it goes straight to the president, doesn't go back to the National Assembly. If we don't propose amendments to the bill, if we just put it in a report, then it will not go back to the NA for another decision there. And then the public participation, Chair, if that is the route the committee wants to go, then that will have to be done in the NCOP first, when it goes to the NA, and the NA can decide whether they would want to look at what the NCOP did or redo one or two things, Chair. You know how people would lobby to get a second bite of the cherry there. So that's my input. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, on the process matter, you know, Frank, I don't want to burden you with too much of work. Could you do us a 1-2-page on this issue so that we might as well attach it to our report? That might have been helpful. And in any case, let's say we decide we want this, but we can't actually implement it for whatever reason, right? For the legal and other constraints. Or we want it, and these are the concerns we have, and so on. Whatever the outcome, if it goes to the MA in that form or other, they're going to come back to you, Frank, to ask you for legal advice anyway, so you'll have to do that. So we can talk offline. Okay, so let's come now to Esther. Do you have anything to say?
Chairperson, thank you. I don't have anything at this stage to add. Thank you.
Okay, you can come in when you want. Okay, can we move on, colleagues, then? Can we Move to the bill. I think that we're not going to go through the slow, painstaking process we did last week. So I'm going to take you quickly through one. So on, you know, I'm not great at using the computer, I'm afraid to say. It's easier on a hard copy to move faster. But on the First Amendment, it's under definition of Constitution. Does the DA have a policy on this matter or an ideology or something, or are you fine with this? Constitution means the Constitution of RSA, 1996.
Are we happy to do
that? Oh, for what? Okay. Then we go down. I might miss something, MP, can you intervene? I'm too old and too old-fashioned, right? I'm trying to get more digitalized, right? Then you look at clause four, sub three. The regulatory board. Any question there? Remember, we're informally now adopting it, so we're not coming back to this. When we meet again, we'll simply say, has anybody picked up anything since we met last on the 16th or whatever the date is today? So on sub three there, no issue, right? Then we go to, it's in tracking, colleagues. When we go to part four, clause 11, 2, and 2A. Right, can you, I'm not going to keep looking at participants and hand raised or keep looking at my cell phone to check if Estelle's alerting me to anybody. Either Estelle or the MP concerned who wants to say anything will say, will come in whenever you want, okay? So I take it that 11, 2 and 2A are fine. I take it that 11, 4 is fine. 7, D, 8, A and B under clause 11. Okay. Then clause 12, there's nothing. 13, there's nothing. Under 14, 1B. Okay? Then no problem. We go to 19, 1B. Any questions there? Any comments? Any changes you want? No. Then we go to 19 sub 3. Then we're on 23B. Okay? Then we move, colleagues, to, if I miss out anything, you'll draw my attention, right? 24 as amended, 24A as amended. Colleagues, we're moving further down. We come now to 36, subject to this section, right? So 36 is amended. Right, now, okay, this is one of the things I wanted to ask, right? So you have 36.1. Why have you removed the 2? So it jumps from 1 to 3. Do you see 36 sub 2, you've removed the 2 on the version we have. You see the track version, MP?
Yes, on.
The one that's got subject to this section. 36.2, you've removed the 2. Why is that? Maybe you fixed it up.
In 36.2, we removed the paragraph B. Yeah, this is the text that's now on the...
Yes, my friend, but you see, if you look above the 2, but let me see your version. Yeah, you see your track version, and mine has the 2 removed. I don't know why, but you see the 2's got bracket, and it's got a line crossing across the 2. Okay, you sorted it out on the screen.
Yeah, I think the version this one that we should look at the 9th February one, because this is the one that we fixed after the meeting last week.
Oh, right. Okay.
The one, a December one, circulated.
Yeah, no, okay, we're going to discuss all of this offline before you bring the next bill to us. Right. 37.1.8. Right. Then 2B has been removed, as you see. Then you go to 3... That is 3B. Sub 3B. Then you go to colleagues' next page on page 20, with a 39 sub 2 sub B, 39.2B. Okay, then we go on to colleagues to 41 practice, 41.3B. No, it's 4B, sorry, 4B. A has been removed. Then we move colleagues to 6D. Colleagues, then we go to 45, duty to report on irregularity. And you have a new 7 there and a new 8, right? Remember 48? And then the 1A and 1B. It's 5, sub 5, sub 5B. It was 5A1, 5B. 6, 7, then we go to 48A, power to enter and search premises, page 26. This we looked at last week at some length, and presumably between then and now. And Frank has given careful attention to it, and has said what he said. Sub B on 50, I mean, section clause 50, disciplinary hearing. Fifty-one A colleagues. We're on to page 33 now on offences. 53. Fifty-seven A. And we're done, right? So colleagues, all that's left is to sort out the remaining matter. Estelle, you'll confer with Nkululeko. I have spoken with him that we're not meeting on Thursday, colleagues. We will seek to meet next Thursday or an appropriate day before or soon thereafter. But we will not delay this beyond the week beginning, well, today is, what's it, 16th, 23rd, not beyond the 30th, colleagues. Okay. Is there anything else people want to raise? No? Thank you all. Thank you, Treasury. Thank you, COSOC, if you're still here. We will meet again. Thank you indeed. Bye.
Thank you, Treasury.